Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I'm going to try to make it through this. But I'm going to give some highlights of the Heroes Con. I won't get into all the details as me and Bill are going to be talking about that on Sunday, so stay tuned for Geek Brunch, where we'll talk more about like what we did each day. Bill did stay in our room. We got like this two room. It's pretty much like one big room and then a bedroom. And it's got like a fold out bed, so that's where Bill stays. But he made it to Heroes Con, so that was awesome. I knew I was gonna have a good time if Bill showed up, 'cause we could talk for hours just about anything, and we did. We talked a lot about a lot. But some of the focus this year was very different. Like I did not purchase a lot of art. That's been on the decline the last few years, and it's relieved a lot of stress. I don't like getting commissions anymore unless I know the artist. And I did get one commission from Andrew Peepoy, and I want to talk a little bit about that because on the flight, I watched a Bonnie and Clyde movie. It wasn't even actually have Bonnie and Clyde so much, but it had the two men that were chasing Bonnie and Clyde. And I became so infatuated with the movie. Like when I go down a rabbit hole, I go all in, man. I go nuts for a bit because when I love something, I like can't like release it like out of my mind. It just sits there and I circle around it and I don't forget it, and that's what I did on the plane. I watched The Highwaymen, which is a Netflix exclusive. It stars Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, and it's a ba basically about the two men that were Texas Rangers of sort, and they were known for killing a lot of men in things that needed required justice. And Bonnie and Clyde were slaughtering a lot of cops. And also, innocents, I don't think they intended to kill innocents, but when you're firing a Tommy gun, you're going to kill a lot of people. And it made me go down, like, historically, like rabbit holes just to see, because they had a gang and there were different members of the gang. And I wanted to learn about all the different characters because all you really hear about is Bonnie and Clyde. And the Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway movie is also on Netflix, which I haven't watched yet. But it was so engrossing that I was like, you know what? If I do a commission by Andrew, I want him to do a Bonnie and Clyde. And how could I have him draw it? And I had him draw Archie as Clyde and Betty as Bonnie, and it came out like amazing. It came out amazing. It's one of my favorite commissions that I've gotten from him, and that's what I did like the first day. Is I immediately, well, we went in there late. They had a new way of giving badges. They introduced something new. Everybody under the age of 18 could get in free. That never happened before. But what it caused is a clusterfuck in signing, getting your badge on the day of Friday when the con opened. So the line like went towards the front of the building and then up some stairs and then all around there. And Bill hadn't gotten his badge, but I got my badge on Thursday. 'Cause you could go on Thursday as people are setting up and get your badge. And it's not really a badge you wear, it's a wristband. And this wristband this year was cloth, and I didn't like it at all. I didn't like it. I liked the plastic better than this. But it essentially goes onto your wrist, and then the person that's at the table pulls it to a point so you can't take it off. So you're stuck wearing this cloth thing all weekend. And in one of the panels, Sergio just ripped his off. He couldn't take it anymore. But Sergio Aragonés. But there, this con. So I started off with that commission. I bought a couple of Artist Alley books that day. You know, me and Bill ran across some books that we wanted to pick up. It was a fun day, and I think on Friday I actually. I hope it wasn't. I hope it was Friday. It might have been Saturday. I met Kirk. I think it might have been Saturday, but I'm not 100% sure. And Kirk goes by Big Army, and he's an amazing dude, man. Like, I had a blast talking to him. He was everything that I ever imagined. He was genuine. There wasn't anything that he surprised me, you know. Like, I've podcasted with him. I've talked to him a lot online, and he was everything I imagined, and more, because he was just really friendly and inviting to my wife and to my friends, and I was glad that we got to share a meal on Sunday together before he left. But Kirk was one of the highlights. I got to meet him and his friend Old Ben on the forum, on the Twitter. His name is David, and his son. I got to meet Darren. I think it's Sutherland. I know her as Ruth because they share the same Facebook account, but they're the Trekker podcast, and they started that podcast partner thing, I believe. And I got to talk with Ron Randall a little bit, and I just thanked him for doing such wonderful Kickstarters. And I had gotten, you know, a Red Sonja commission from him as part of the Kickstarter, and I was just like, this is an amazing piece. And he says, you know what, I'm posting it so I can get more commissions. So he's gonna set an example of his artwork out. And yeah, it's really amazing. It was a real relaxed con. There was like not a lot of hurrying. Micah and Claire were there. Bill was there. So Geek Brunch was essentially there, minus Heath. If you look at like the core members of Geek Brunch, those that don't know, Micah, he's what happened with Geek Brunch is this was before Eric passed on DC Noise, but Heath was going through some stuff and he wanted to quit, and I wanted to keep the podcast going, and I didn't know what to do. I was thinking of having like a brunch buddy every week and just calling friends that I had met. But Micah and Bill almost like simultaneously said, you know, we'll be your co-hosts. And that lasted for a long time until Micah went to Japan and he's like, you know, I'm kind of done with this podcasting thing in comics for a while. And he kind of left, but we always go to North Carolina. He lives there. So we get to talk to Mike and Claire like a lot. And they did come out and visit us one time in Colorado Springs, and we had a blast. Hopefully Bill can do that someday, you know, come out and visit. But yeah, we met them, met Kirk, met David. I saw Robert Atkins again. Talked about his upcoming G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero arc. I saw some pages. He's doing his art on 8.5 by 11, kind of like Shannon Gallant now. Amazing pieces. I hope the colors and whoever inks it on that paper does not obfuscate the detail that he puts in there, because I think they obfuscate Shannon Gallant's art. Like if you see Shannon Gallant's art and then you see the final product, they fuck it up with the colors. I'm gonna admit it, 'cause his art is fucking amazing and detailed, and you don't get to see that in a final product. A lot of the lines are removed, and it I don't know. It doesn't look as rendered is it truly is. So I hope when they color over Robert, that it looks like it did when he was doing G.I. Joe before, because it was highly rendered. So I got to see Drew Moss again, talk to him for a bit. He had an amazing piece of Two-Face, and I told him how emotional, that Two-Face piece that he had up for auction was. And I think he got a good amount for it, it's because they have the art auction, and a lot of the pieces go for a lot of money, and that's how they pay for that whole convention center, is basically the art auction. Panels this year, I went to one panel. Bill, I don't think Bill liked it as much as I do, but I was infatuated with it. Let me see if I can get her name. I'm gonna go to my page, because I basically met the granddaughters of DC, if you will, like a lot of key women in DC, who grandfathers started DC. And it was amazing to me, like, just to hear them talk and have these panels. One was before Superman. And I went to this panel really solely for Andrew Peepoy, because he was in there as an art expert. We're going to talk about some Golden Age art, and it was before Superman. And that's where I met two people that I was really shocked, Nikki Wheeler Nicholson, who her there was a Major Nicholson that helped found DC Comics. He lost the company, but he founded DC Comics. So it's like a big deal. And she wrote one book that I ended up purchasing. I can't remember. I think it's called Before Superman as well. And it's a hardcover, and it's prose, but it talks about like her grandfather and the starting of DC Comics before Superman came. And in that same panel, it had Athena Finger, and I was sort of blown away, because I had watched the Bill and Batman, the one with Bill Finger, and this is Athena Finger, the granddaughter. And I was just amazed that she was there, because I got really emotionally invested with this panel, and it was really spectacular. And if you're on Facebook, I think I even posted them on Twitter, but I posted all the granddaughters and me, because I posed with all of them. There was a Wonder Woman panel that also had was hosted by Nikki Wheeler Nicholson, and it had Christy Marston, which is the granddaughter of Will Marston, the creator of Wonder Woman. So this was amazing. This is amazing to meet these women and talk to them. So that was something I didn't expect, but turned out to be phenomenal. Those two panels I went to, I went to a what other panel did I go to? Trying to remember. I went to the Sergio Aragonés, the group panel, which this was the one panel that I said, Bill, we have to go to this panel. And it was emotional. It talked about how they got into comics, and Sergio had this sad story. It was a happy story about the mad creators meeting his mom, and the mom cooking for them, and he got real emotional because he was thinking about his mom, and it was amazing. The stories were funny. Barb went to this panel. She laughed. We laughed. We cried. It was just an amazing panel. Stan Sakai and Mark Evanier in the panel. Even them talking about their plane trip down was very funny. They just banter like they're best friends, and it comes across like that. It was very much in the vein of like the Marv Wolfman, George Perez panel that we saw at C2E2, and God, it was just spectacular. I love that panel, and I want to track down Boogeymen, which is a Dark Horse book, because of one of the stories they told. It's a 4-issue series, but it had an interesting story behind it, and I am going to track those down. I try to track them down at the convention. I'm trying to think one more panel. I know there was one more DC panel I think I went to. I saw Dave from Dave Talks Comics. I see him there every year. What else? I'm trying to go through my. We had that. Saw Luke Foster, of course. We had our meal at the Dish. We eat at the Dish every like Thursday before the con starts. I think that sort of wraps up like the key stuff that I did. There was a lot more than that in detail, and I'm sure me and Bill will get into it. But I did go through a 50 cent bin, believe it or not, and I found a lot of crap that I wanted. There was that, and going through Artist Alley. Kirk turned me into a book called Z Girl and the Four Tigers, and I cleared out everything that this guy had. I basically bought it on Saturday. I bought issue one, and the guy said, if you like it, you can come back and buy the rest, and I'll do a sketch for you in the back of one of the issues. And I read it that night because I knew I wanted to read it to see if I was gonna like it or not. And I did. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was amazing. And I bought all his books, and then he had it. So that was like five issues in this series, and there was like a sixth issue, and then there was a zero issue. So there was a total of like seven comics, and then there was a Little Red Riding Hood book he wrote and drew, and this was the artist, and I picked that up as well. Matter of fact, I should. One of the things that I bought is Bill always has one of these like comic carriers. It's like a folder with magnets on it, and you can carry about like, I don't know, probably 10 to 12 books in there. And I bought one of those, and it was a really good life-saving for all the books that I really didn't want to damage. Want to talk a little bit about something that Eric of Cowabunga did for me. Eric owns a comic book store in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and he's become a really good friend of mine. Like, I just could sit there, like I talked to him for like an hour on the floor one day, and then we got to eat together. And he did me like a really solid. Like, I don't take a lot of books. I don't take any books to get signed. And Tula Lute was there, and I didn't even look at who was there. And I was like, man, I wish I could have brought my Faithless number one, or actually the X-rated edition, and get her to sign it, because she did the cover for Faithless number one. And you know what Eric did for me is he gave me his copy so I could get it signed. And I stuck the course because he not only gave me that, he gave me an issue of Black Magic, which she did a cover, and I got that signed as well. And it was an interesting experience. It was pretty amazing. It was painful and amazing. Well, thanks again to Eric. Like, he was Eric is if you guys want an alternative to DCBS and you want more of a personal, like somebody you can talk to instead of get emails, you should, and you want your discount on comics, you can get comparative DCBS discounts at Cowabunga and order through them. Plus, you can get on their final order cutoff and get books. Recently, I was on the Slack channel and Eric said, Diamond had released a bunch of omnibuses for Marvel that are marked to go, like to go at like 60, 70% off. And he told me about it, and I bought four Omnibus from him, and he shipped them to me. So he's done me like a lot of solids, and I just enjoy. We got to meet his brother-in-law, Caleb, and that was really cool because he went to eat with us. And yeah, he's just an amazing person, an amazing comic book shop owner. He's on the John Mayo comic book top 100 sales type podcast. And yeah, he's just a really good guy, and I really want to thank him for hooking me up with these books that I got signed that I'll never forget. And plus, it was a really good experience that me and Bill actually didn't wait in line. I was in line for an hour and a half, and there was only like five people in front of me. But because I got there early on Saturday, and those five people were all getting sketches, because what she was doing is she sells these her work in like these little small books, like just have what do they call them? Sketchbooks, but they're really nice put together sketchbooks. And I got one called Sequoia, and I wasn't gonna get a sketch. I just wanted to get these signed, but everybody in front of me was getting a sketch, and that's why it was taking so long. The one thing I will say is that Tulu Tay is an amazing woman. She is a fantastic artist. She is a fantastic person. She treated everybody that went to her line with the utmost respect. You could talk to her. You could. It was amazing. She was an amazing woman. She's absolutely beautiful. And I don't know who was with her there, but I want to thank him because we were just waiting in line, and it was taking a long, long time. I almost gave up. I was like, "Do I really want to wait in line for a signature for this long?" And I said, "Man, Eric did me a solid. I'm gonna wait here even if it takes all day." And it was a pretty much an hour and a half I waited in line standing. And I'm not the best stander. Like, I have plantar fasciitis. If I'm walking, I'm fine, but if I'm standing in one spot for a long time, my bottom of my foot, my left heel, just starts to hurt really bad. And also hurts when I sit for a long time and then stand up. But I waited. I got to meet two people that were in line. They were fascinating. One guy was dressed as Constantine, and he had an all-star Batman for her to sign. I realized that she did a lot more work than I ever, like cover art that I had ever imagined. Even though I own most of it, I guess I just never put two and two together. And she did interiors for that All-Star Batman as well. But we waited there, and as I got like next in line, Bill showed up, and he just was gonna wait with me. And we just started talking about how they were talking about their eyesight, like they're having trouble, and she's having trouble. She's getting older, seeing with glasses, and she doesn't want to wear bifocals. And we just talked about how it's happened, like you hit your 40s, and it just degrades from there on out. And I actually had her personalize mine because I knew the guy in back of me was gonna piss me off. So he had like 50 of those Faithless covers, and I heard him say he's gonna sell them all, and that just breaks my heart. I hope she charged him for it, or did only like 10, and then made him come back and wait in line again, because I don't know. I know if I was a creator and I knew if people were flipping it, like just to sell it, and it didn't mean anything to him, like I'd want to meet the people that it really meant something. It really meant something to them. Like, this moment meant something to me, and then we got to talk, and I said, "Can you personalize this?" And but we started talking about glasses, and then the man that was with her, he said, "Do you want me to take pictures?" And he never offered anybody else to take pictures. I'm like, "Sure, here's my camera." He took pictures of her sketching my piece. And of us. And it was just an amazing experience, and I'm so glad I did it, and I owe Eric that, because I wouldn't have experienced that. And it really was a good, it was a fantastic experience even waiting in line because I got to meet some cool people. One of them had the Warren Ellis Supreme Blue Rose customized hardcover. You know, he had it bound himself for her to sketch in and sign. And I got to talk to him a little bit because he had a Warren Ellis book that he had bound, which had the Supreme Blue Rose in it and trees. And we were talking a lot about Warren Ellis books and stuff like that. So it was a pretty damn good time. The only thing that bothered me about that line was the guy on back of me. And I saw that motherfucker there the next day doing the same goddamn thing where he's taking like 25 books of the same nudie cover of Faithless to get her to sign. And then he's going to go and put them on eBay. And that just bugs the shit out of me. But that wasn't as nearly as bad. You know, 25 to 50 books is nothing compared to the motherfucker that was the artist that does Wonder Woman covers. What is her name? It's losing me. But at the same time, I was across from Tulu Lotay, that cover artist. I'll look her up because she does like almost all the cover Bs for Wonder Woman. They talk a lot about her in Comics for Fun and Profit. Let's see. Going to my comic base. Wonder Woman. Fifth series. And I just need to find a cover B. Because this story is pretty, oh gosh, why am I not seeing it? Oh, because I'm not on cover, that's why. What a dummy. Jenny Frison. That same, she was like right across the aisle. And I saw this one guy with a whole fucking box of Wonder Woman. And I saw people trying to get in line and they saw this box and they're like, oh my God, I can't wait this long. I just hate that shit. I mean, take something you want signed. Don't hog the whole time so other fans can't get to it, you know? That's just ridiculous. But that was amazing, and got to have some great meals with everyone. It was just a lot of fun. We talked a lot of comics and a lot of stuff. Just, it was so much fun. And I talked about the panels. I'm gonna talk about some of the books that I got. I did get from Charles Forsman. I told him how much I have all his work and how much I love his work. And he was telling us a little bit about, you know, they're starting filming one of his other works for Netflix. And I said, man, I hope they produce some of the ones that I like Revenger and God, I can't remember the one. Slasher. That I love Slasher. That would adapt to TV, I think, so well. But he it there's this one called We Bite, and it's a bunch of sketches that he did of monsters, essentially. Like it's got Freddy Krueger, John Constant. Oh no, Psycho, Bela Lugosi, Aliens. I don't know what this one is. Miss Frankenstein, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Nosferatu, Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Lily Munster, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Morticia. There's a couple of them. I don't need Toxic Avenger. This one I don't even know who it is. The guy that's in Goonies, that weird deformed guy, Dracula, Phantom of the Opera, Mummy, Frankenstein. Except this Frankenstein's very much like Herman Munster. The vampire from Near Dark, played by the one guy that just died recently. I can't remember his name, But anyway, it even has the guy from Plan 9, Tor from Plan 9 from Outer Space. But I got some books. There's this guy David, Dave Jordan. These books are much in the vein, he tells me, of the Hernandez brothers. And I had bought a book from him called, God, I can't remember the name, but it's very his, this book I got from him was very much drawn in the Kirby vein, and I liked it. So this year I bought some other books from him. And he lives in Albuquerque, so we have that bond. I met him in Albuquerque. I see him at North Carolina a lot, and talk to him. So I got Where Do We Go From Here 1 through 5. I found some Archie. I would have went to fucking town if I found this one dealer and it wasn't like 1 hour before closing. He had the philosophy that I like. He had like 25 long boxes of $5 books, another 25 of $10 books, and then you got $25, and then the rest were like whatever the price was at a certain discount. But I found some Archie. I always like to get Archie. I found Archie number 247. I found Archie's Girls Betty and Veronica 173. This cover is amazing. It has Archie and Betty playing Twister, and Betty saying, "This is groovy. What's the next move, Veronica?" And Veronica says, "To get rid of this silly game, Miss Cooper, that's what's next." She doesn't want to play Twister. I bought Archie number 95. It might be my earliest Archie. Archie is saying, "Yuck, yuck, hey Veronica, wait till you see the silly looking suit Betty's wearing." And Veronica is like taking off a coat, and Archie can't see what bathing suit she's wearing, but it's the same bathing suit. Sorry, I just think it's funny. I got an issue of Laugh, number 143, 153. It's Betty walking, so this is guaranteed to give me good posture. And she's carrying books on her head, and Jughead said, "And a head for books." He had a $10 bin, and this had the J. Scott Campbell run of Thundercats, and it was issues 0 through 5, and I couldn't go wrong there, getting that for $5 or $10. I got an issue of Plop. I only have 2 issues. I bought number 20. I bought an Enemy Ace collection, War Idol with George Pratt. I bought GI Combat. What number is this? 111, which has the Honda tank fighting a fighter pilot, and it says that buzzard's going after us to the last man. I have GI Combat 110. This cover is amazing. I have GI Combat number 163. The Honda tank is coming back on a soldier. And he says, "Hold your fire. That's not the enemy. It's Gus." But Gus is holding a bottle, like one of those bottle bombs, behind his back, like he's going to take out the Honda tank. Our Army at War 274. War is Hell, number 4 and 6. Four Battle Comic Tales, number 5. I got a comic sketchbook called Carpe Noctrum. I got this book for free because I talked to Source Point Press and I bought 2 of their other books, even though that didn't have Source Point Press on it. I got the Rot number 1, which is a David Hayes and Sean Sill book. We talked about Z Girl and the Four Tigers. I got all of those. I've read 2 of them already. They're amazing. Little Red, that was the Little Red Riding Hood book. One shot that I bought. I enjoyed it. This book I loved. I gotta tell you who this guy is. He's very much in the vein of Tim V. Hill. And I'll talk about these books on Geek Brunch. Me and Alex Delaney. And the way I came across this was Bill Bomer bought a book called The Derelict. And I said, Bill, can I read one of these issues? Because the art reminded me of Tim VeeHill. And I read the issue and I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. And Barb's like, well, you don't need to buy it now that you read it. When are you going to read it again? And I was like, that's a good point, Barb. I'll just read Bill's. So I read all of Bill's Derelict. He had issue one, two, three. One and two are in the same book. Issue three was in a flip book, and the Derelict, there was a Derelict special. And I read them all in that same night, and I was like, this is fucking amazing. And on Sunday, I decided I have to pick him up so I could own him. And I picked up his other book, The Other Side of Town, and I don't regret any of it because I've read everything he did. I read all the Derelicts, I read those. There was an insect bath that he did. I read all of that. He did a one shot called Swan Song about post-apocalyptic cannibalism. Amazing. I read it. Another book I read was a book called Griffin, Galaxy's Most Wanted by Ben Kahn and Bruno Hidalgo. Ben Kahn is amazing. We had interesting conversation with him. I love talking to him. He's very enthusiastic. He's has all this energy. Very kind. I can't. And then I read his book and I was like, this is pretty amazing. The downside to this is it's digital only. And he just printed a few copies, so he had something for the con. So I don't know if I'll ever see the book in print, but I would love to have it in print because digital kind of sucks, let's be honest. But I will, as I go to purchase my issue, last issue of Monica's book, which I absolutely adore on Comixology, I will pick the rest of this stuff up. I picked up a book called Wild Bullet. It's an anthology. That's what I picked up from the Source Point Press booth. Love Lost. This is Blue Wave. And Blue Wave had an impressive booth. Like there was like five books I wanted to buy, and I end up just doing an anthology of love called Love and Lost. And I think I'm gonna really enjoy it. And then I got into some of the dollar comics. I got a book called Star Rangers number one. I don't even know what that is. There was a Windjammer Samurai from Neil Adams. I think I was missing that one. Street Wolf, I got one, two, and three. And this was a book I found in the old Capital City order form, and I was like, the art just looked amazing. I had to get it. I picked up from Comics Tribe Exit Generation. I had missed from Image Comics the Todd McFarlane book with Brian Holgen and Clayton Crane, Savior. So I picked up those. They were 50-cent books. I picked up a book from Eclipse that looks amazing. The cover is phenomenal and the interiors are amazing. Who did this? I gotta tell you. Oh, the story is by Bruce Jones and the art is by Gerald Forton, and it just looks amazing. And it's called Hand of Fate, number one, from Eclipse Comics. I picked up a little Jamie Delano book and Sean Phillips called Hell Eternal from Vertigo. I picked up some Halo Jones from Quality Comics. I don't even know if I had them. I know I have them in trade because I recently bought them, but I wanted to have the singles. I knew I didn't have Top Cow's Freshman 2, so I picked up a good portion of that for 50 cents. Extinction Event from Wildstorm. I knew I didn't have this. It looks interesting. I picked up Felon. I think that's a Top Cow, 1 through 4. I picked up from New Universe Justice 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 12. I picked up Shy, The Way of the Warrior from Crusade Comics. I've been telling you guys that I've trying to complete Topps Comics, and there was Jackie Chan's Spartan X. I picked up a few issues of that. There was a one shot called Jack Kraken I picked up. From Cliffhanger Image Comics, I picked up High Roads in the 50 cent bin. I picked up Z Nation number 1 and 2. That's also something I watched on the flight. And you know what? While it's not as good as Black Summer, which is the prequel to it, I really enjoyed the first episode of Z Nation. There was a Vampy book from, which is like manga Vampy, but it looked really interesting from Anarchy Comics, and I wanted to complete Anarchy Comics because I've enjoyed everything they've done. There was from Artist Alley, there was a book called The Devil Within. It was kickstarted, the first issue, and the second issue was done on Indie Planet, or Indie, what is the other one? Indie Agogo. I picked up Saltwater and Spirit Drifters from this one writer, and the artist is actually maybe doing Bill Bomer's book. At least that's what the plan is. I picked up Static by Matt Lisniewski. That one I got only because Bomer picked it up and it looked awesome. I got the two signed books that I was telling you about. Ghost Butterfly I picked up. I got a Grim Fairy Tales for free at the Xenoscope booth. I picked up, this was good. It was $20 for a Kickstarter trade plus two one shots, and usually the regular one shots are $10 on a Kickstarter. But it was Dalric the Mighty, which is like a Conan type book, and Shadow of Oblivion. I don't know how they're gonna be, but they sound interesting. I picked up Cherry Blackbird, which this guy's art. This guy I saw because he drew the cover for a scout book that was in the vein of Tales from the Crypt. And it was a controversial cover, which I tried to buy, but he was sold out when I got there. The second time, I'm coming back once I get some cash to buy that. And it was gone because of the controversy of the CBCS. This particular book had false cracks in it, which weren't really cracks, but they were drawn in cracks, and it had a template over the cover that made the book look really old. Well, the controversy was that CBCS graded it a 5.0, and it really was like a 9.8, and they took off points for defects that were part of the book. They were purposely drawn in templates to make the book look really raunchy, and it caused a lot of controversy. And I wanted to get that book, but this guy did Cherry Blackbird, and it looks pretty dang amazing. I picked up the Infernal Pact from him as well. I like what he had in his booth. And from the Zamundos, who I met last Heroes Con, I picked up from Cullen Bunn Death Follows by A.C. Zamundo and Carlos Nicholas Zamundo. And I always have a blast talking to Carlos and the Zamundos. So that's a lot of what I got. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. I also want to thank Kirk. He made prints of some of his original commissions, and he gave me an Atari Force that was amazing. It's in color. He gave me a He-Man and Skeletor commission he had, and my favorite, this one I absolutely love, is a Sergeant Rock one with Mademoiselle Marie and a Nazi throwing a potato. What do they call them? The potato grenades at him. And she's saying, "Sergeant, watch out." Really excellent. And it feels like it's an original. When he makes copies, he doesn't fuck around. He makes them on like the original paper. Like one of them is on Atari Force gloss. It looks like a professional print. So Kirk didn't have to do that, and he did it because he knows I love Atari Force. He knows I like Sergeant Rock. And he did that out of the kindness of his heart. So thank you, man. I really appreciate it. So, God, it was such a blast. There was a lot to do, a lot to see, a lot of creators I talked to. Bob Franz was there with Metal Shark Bro. That guy's always a blast to talk to. Saw Neil Adams. I was tempted to get something this time, but what I wanted to get was his signatures were just a little too high. Yeah, it was a blast. Artist Alley. I feel like I got to go down every row, but I didn't see everything. I think I needed one more day to see everything. And there was a lot of panels I missed that I wanted to go to because they were in conflict with the panel that I wanted to be at. So I really wanted to go to the Charles Forsman one, but Bill could tell me about it when we talk about it, because he went to that one as I went to the Wonder Woman panel. I couldn't miss it when I knew a relative of Marston was going to be there. I had to go to that. Yeah, God, it was so much fun. I wish I had more time. I wish. The only thing I didn't like was the flight back, because we had to pay an extra day at the hotel because we missed it. But the flight back we were really worried about because we only had like a 50-minute layover, and if anything delayed it, it would screw it up, and everything just worked out perfect. So, they were even saying they were going to reroute us to another airport because of a lightning storm in Colorado Springs. But everything worked out. We were able to go home, get Harley, and even though we got home pretty late, it worked out. Oh, and some of the big purchases I forgot to talk about. Where are they? Those are my. I don't remember what I did with them. Oh wow, I bought more comics. But I have some big purchases, but I don't know where I put them. I put a lot of Golden Age books. They should be around here. Hold on, bear with me. Oh, and I did read Sarah on the plane. Which is my first TKO in read it in entirety. I went and stopped at Heroes. Their booth. Oh, I forgot to give a shout out to Andrew B-Boy. He gave me a fanzine of Mary Marvel that's amazing. How could I forget this? He's been telling me that he has had something for me, and this is what it turned out to be. It's like a mini comic with reprints of Mary Marvel comics in it. It's like a fanzine. Very awesome. I also got some postcards from Athena Finger. She actually drew them of Batman and Robin and Catwoman and Joker. Really cool. I've got Captain Marvel Adventures number 67. Captain Marvel gets a secretary. It just looked too awesome to pass up. I got my first Golden Age Hawkman cover. No, it might be my second. Sorry, my second Golden Age Hawkman cover. It's Flash Comics number 94. It has a very early Kubert cover. It's phenomenal. The book has a tear in it, which brought down the value. But other than that tear, it's a beautiful copy. This one had some water damage, but I've always wanted an All-American Comics, and it was somewhat affordable. And it not only had that, but it had Harlequin on the cover. It had Alan Scott and Golden Age Harlequin, and that's after my daughter Harlequin. So I had to. I've really always been a fan of the Golden Age Harlequin, and she's on the cover. So I'm like, I first met that character, at least. I remember meeting that character in Infinity Inc. back in the 80s, and I was always curious to get a Golden Age, and I finally did. So those are some of the Golden Age purchases that I got. And I have a whole nother bag of comics. I bought. Oh no, these are ones that I got from the comic store. I bought some dollar comics. I was like, there's more. I bought a book called Everyman from Epic Comics, but it has Mike Allred art in it, which is really amazing. I bought a couple issues of Grimjack, a book called The Survivors I never even heard of from Spectrum Comic. This publisher looks pretty awesome. Like, there are some ads in here of Silhouette and The Guardian. And it just looks like an impressive shared universe. And Silhouette, I want to look into that. Armor, Continuity, Pacific Comics Presents number 4, Kato number 2 and 3, and New York Year Zero. I don't even know what it is, but it's Eclipse comic, black and white. Looks pretty cool. I think that's it. And I got a Kickstarter from two people I know and love, Sean Pryor and Keith Cunningham, who co-created a book called Lifted of Gods and Thieves that came in as a Kickstarter. It's written by Chris Murren. They created the concept. Art by John Rodriguez and Yuko Smith. A really nice Kickstarter package that came in. So that, with that, I will wrap up this episode. Oh, forgot two couple magazines I got. I got a couple of Eerie magazines with Richard Corbin covers. They look fucking amazing. One of them has a naked lady on it with the Triceratops hitting the tree, and she's on top of the tree. It looks fucking amazing. And the other one has like a lizard and a woman on the cover. And I don't own any Eerie, like original Eerie books. And I picked up this just based on the cover. I had seen this on my comic shop one time. And I didn't even know what they were. I just bought them because of the cover. It's called Sex to Sexty. And what they are is a bunch of X-rated comic strips. I don't know if they come from something in particular, but it's called Split. One split tail and one is vacuum packed. One of the covers has like this guy on the couch, like he's bringing flowers to his girlfriend, and her top is almost coming off, and she sticks her tongue in his ear and it comes out the other ear. And then there's this one about this farmer guy in a barn, and he's making out this beautiful woman, and the goat is eating his pants. Like, his ass is in the air and the goat's eating his ass pockets. It's funny. But those, I picked up those as well. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank to everyone that I got to meet at the con. I had a blast. Oh, I saw Bill Zanowitz and some comic book bears. I forgot to shout out to them. It's always a pleasure to see them. I can't remember where I saw them, though. I was in another panel. And they were in it. I know they were in the Wonder Woman panel. But there was a panel we all went to, and Dave was there, too. And I can't think of the panel. I'm missing one panel that I didn't, that I forgot to mention. And I obviously didn't post a picture of it. Or I would, it would come to mind. I might scan the pictures real quick, just to see. Cause what I did is I like to post on Facebook that I was at the con and just things to remember. Cause when I come up on Facebook next year, they'll be there. And I think I got every, but I could have sworn I went to another DC related panel, but maybe I'm losing it. Going through one more set of pictures. I got a picture taken with the Cylon, which is awesome because it looked exactly like a Cylon. Yeah, I guess not. I should have gone to more panels. But I would have taken a picture of it for sure. So I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back with the Mike M's Weekly Reads. And that might, if I did it, it might even get me caught up. Just out of curiosity. Yeah, if I do like the next 3 weeks, I'm caught up. I can't have that. So this episode will probably release midweek, next week. So I will talk to you again, and I want to thank you for listening, and I'll be back with the weekly reads. Bye-bye. Hello, and welcome back to Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's been a week or so since I recorded the first half of this, and I don't remember exactly what I recorded. I think I went over some books that I talked about and some strategies for reducing my monthly intake. Just an update, I did reduce my comic book buying by $500, which is pretty impressive considering, but it's still a small piece, so it could give you a ballpark of how much I spend on comics. But the $500 was pretty easy. There wasn't a lot of trades to get on that new solicit, and they're the expensive stuff like the Omnibuy and stuff. So I've been using a weird logic with that, like, is that on Marvel Unlimited? Do I really love it? Just a couple of criteria. Can I read it elsewhere digitally? And then, so that was an sort of an easy kill on collected editions, even though, man, it's tough. Especially this month, it's going to be a bear because there's just so much. Like, DC's been, the last couple of months, it's been fairly easy to not buy stuff, but this next month is pure hell. And the other thing is getting rid of variants. That was easy. I just stopped getting cover Bs on DC, and then the hardest one was the Red Sonja Dynamite covers, 'cause man, I can't choose one. It's so hard. You might think that's weird, but it is. That's the one that sort of had to go. And then I did a third thing is there were books that like I wanted to add, but they weren't like I have to have. There were like things I really wanted to read. So I put them all in like a notepad for the month, and I said, oh, I could, these are ones that I'm passing on. If it does happen that I have time, I can read it digitally on Marvel Unlimited or the DC app once it gets there. So I keep track of things that I want in the previews catalog. So that's just a slight update. Since then, I bought a lot of comics, and I still have one more box to inventory, but I don't want to go over all of them because it was a lot. It was extreme amount. I had a shipment come from Reed, which helped me narrow down my Avengers and get me closer to getting a run of Avengers. I had more X-Men coming in. Key issues, the Claremont time frame from Aaron Myers. I bought some more dollar books at my comic shop. There's a lot of stuff. Had a few more Kickstarters that come in. The last thing that came in though is Giant Size Defenders number 3. It's the first appearance of Korvac. I got it on eBay, and I was pretty shocked because I thought I was complete on Defenders, and I thought that Giant Size Defenders was just reprints. Well, there's some original material in there, my friend. So now I have only 2 issues of Giant Size Defenders, and I need to try to seek out the rest of them just to complete. 'Cause I don't know, those that have listened to this podcast a long time know like Defenders was kind of my gateway drug into the Marvel Universe, and I just love them so much. And I need to get these giant size defenders now. So I'll be seeking those out. And what else? I think that's about like a lot of the new comics I got in. I did finish The Call, The Conqueror and Call the Destroyer, thanks to Reed as well. And then there was a lot of miscellaneous stuff in that last shipment, and a lot of miscellaneous stuff from Aaron too. I did get the first appearance of Too Much Coffee Man, and I've never read that stuff, so that's a new addition. And so that's like a summation of things. Also wanted to mention those that listen to the DC Spotlight. We've been picking like two titles that are current and one that's a retro book, sort of. Anything that's on the app that we both can read together and talk about on the DC Universe app. And we've been covering Manhunter because, at least for me, my selfish reasons is I'm addicted to that book, and I think Kyle likes it quite a bit. So we're co on the next episode we're covering the next five, so it'll be 11 through 15, and then we're gonna poll people based on selections in the alphabet in the DC app, and then I guess Kyle will pick two and I'll pick two. But this last time, for not the coming episode but the one after it, we had a poll, and we had a 1986 Dead Man miniseries in there with Garcia Lopez art. I had selected two Palmiotti and Gray books, which were Jonah Hex and Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters. And there was one other one. Chase from DC Comics. And I was kind of surprised, based on who I thought our listeners were, that would vote on this. And some of them might be voting and not even listening to the show. You don't know that. You don't have insight into that. But from I was sort of surprised. Dead Man won. But I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, because of all those properties, Dead Man is probably the most recognizable of all of them. Maybe Jonah Hex is a little more recognizable because he has had a movie. He's been in Legends of Tomorrow. He's been in the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon, but so is Dead Man. But Dead Man hasn't had a movie. Dead Man would make a hell of a movie if they did the Mike Baron deluxe format books with Kelly Jones artwork. If they did any of, oh, it'd make a glorious movie. So there's that, and just other thing I want to talk about is Vertigo. So Vertigo is going away. DC decided to shut the doors on it, I guess because it's not profitable enough. I don't think it'll go away for a long time. It'll go away for a while until they realize they're losing the trademark, and then it'll come back. So what goes away might go away, but it'll come back. So I wouldn't worry. Plus, they'll still publish books in that vein under the DC imprint. I don't know what it'll be like. DC Black Label, maybe. It'll be interesting to see in upcoming previews, like what happens to American Carnage and books like that, the Goddess book, if they just let them play out under Vertigo banner and then expire, or if they're ongoing, if they can keep continuing under a DC label, and see how it does. I don't know what it'll mean in terms of sale, because Vertigo has always sold pretty low in the singles. I don't know if having a DC label will help. It may or may not. Well, but we'll see. The other thing interesting that happened is they also decided to close down Mad Magazine. So what that means is they are going to stop. They've colorized Mad Magazine fairly recently and renumbered, and they're going to stop that. And then they're going to let subscriptions run out by printing reprint material, maybe older reprint material. and soliciting those, but there's a plan for it to just let it expire. And again, I think it's going to be one of those things where in a couple years we'll see Mad Magazine, maybe not in monthly format, but in quarterly or something like that, because I don't think they want to throw away the trademark. I mean, they've had a Mad Magazine TV show. There's still properties like Spy versus Spy that they can make money off commercially, Don Martin, all kinds of different things. They probably still sell collected editions on that material. So we'll see how that all pans out. Last but not least, what was the last thing I wanted to talk about? There was one other thing, and it was something that just came up, and I am perplexed because I can't remember it. I had it on the back of my mind, like I don't write anything down, so I forget. So, what was I gonna talk about? Oh, I had just finished Batman the Damned, and I just thought it was amazing. What a way to loop back and finish what started in number one. I'll be talking about it in another episode. It's one of those issues that I read and I just wanted to talk to somebody about, and I couldn't. There was nobody to talk to. I just was excited about it. The other thing I was surprised about, I read Superman Year One, and I had already heard 11 O'Clock Comics like bashing it, like saying it was the worst Superman comic they've ever read. So I went in with low expectations, and the tone was quite different for a Superman book. But it is Black Label, so I was already expecting something slightly different. But what I found out for me personally is the more I read, the more addicted to the story I became. And while there were some dark tones in there, a lot of it was bullying, but there was one scene in there with Lana that was really, really dark. And it seemed really uncomfortable, but that's the kind of things you could expect with the Max label and the Black label, you know, Max label being Marvel and Black label being DC Comics. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about those briefly. And then we'll get into the weekly reads because I want to release an episode today. And this has some small amounts of weekly reads. This is going from June 3rd through June 9th. I had only read a total of 20 comics that week. This was the week before Heroes Con, so there was a lot of prep and stuff going on, a lot of work because I had to get work done before we left, and only had 20 books. There was one from Uptown, I didn't even know that company existed until recently, 11 from Marvel Comics, one from Dark Horse, and 7 from DC, and that one from Dark Horse. It could fall into Marvel because I did read it in an Epic collection, but let's call it Dark Horse because that was the original source material. So we'll start at the bottom, at the 2 out of 5s. There was two issues. So I didn't like Ronin. I'll be honest with you. I liked it more when it started. I really enjoyed issue one, and as I read on, the book sort of deteriorated. So the experiment was, if I agreed with Jim Shooter about it being a cluster in terms of putting a book together from his Daredevil after his Daredevil run, and I agree with Shooter. I really think that is. I mean, I think there was a lot of ideas in there that were fantastic, but overall, I didn't like it as it went as I read on. It became a chore. And it was a lot of material, but I did finish it. I worked my way through it. Ronin 5 and 6 had Cassie and the Ronin end up destroying Aquarius and Agat. That's that god that started all this business. And let me just make sure I'm recording still, okay? And the Ronin has to sacrifice himself to defeat Virgo, which is the computer on Aquarius. It's kind of like Mother and Rye. I mean, I saw a lot of Rye similarities, so I don't know if Shooter had all this in the back of his head, and when Rye came out, a lot of the ideas of Ronin became Rye. And Billy, in which he came back as a Ronin in the future through Billy. It's very convoluted, and I agree with Shooter that this was kind of a mess. The first two issues held up, but then it broke down from issue to issue in terms of making sense. I get the gist of everything that was in there, and it is the story of a Ronin, but there's a time jump in there, and it jumps significantly, like from samurai days all the way to way into the future, and that's how you get Aquarius, and that jump is really jarring. So overall, the series probably 1 through 6 sits a 3 out of 5. These two issues were a 2 out of 5, so I got something I didn't care for. Well, at least it wasn't for me. But I encourage people to go, check for yourself because it is Frank Miller, and it is worth your time to expose yourself to his creations. And that Superman Year One is also written by him, which I liked a lot more. But we'll talk about that in a future episode. So we then go into the 3 out of 5s. We had Conan number 10. This one, Conan was caught trying to rob an area and is accused of murder when a dead body is found. There is a sarcophagus and the body is missing. We then got into the comic from Uptown. You're probably like, what is Uptown Comics? Well, it's called Dinosaur Rex. It was a 3 out of 5. It's about a spoiled kid stops getting his monthly money from his rich aunt. He goes to see what is happening, and the money has stopped flowing because of his missing uncle. So the aunt says, all the money was coming from your uncle, and now he's gone. So he has to team up with his cousin to go and try and find his uncle. And then there's a short story about an alien organization on Earth that deals with complaints, which is pretty cool. Messner-Loeb story. That was a really good story. Now that second story I really latched on to. I thought it was really interesting to have a comic book about a complaint department. We then get into the next 3 out of 5. It was Batman: The Last Knight on Earth. I know some people really like this Elseworlds tale. I just thought I enjoyed it. It didn't like rock my world. It was not definitely Batman Damned, which I liked a lot more. For me, Bruce awakens in Arkham. Is it a dream or is he crazy? He gets many visits from Alfred and eventually escapes with a costume and a severed lantern with Joker's head. Talking with his talking head. He finds out that Earth is in the ruins and there is a small faction led by Wonder Woman, and he contemplates joining that Justice League type of characters, but then ends up trying to save things with his talking Joker head. We'll see how that plans out, future issues. The next 3 out of 5 is Black Cat number 1. This is a real new title from Marvel Comics. Really beautiful Art Germ and J. Scott Campbell covers. I had to buy issue 1 and 2. That's gonna stop. I'm gonna make choice on which ones to buy. I'll probably be buying more cover A's unless there's something that's equal in cost that I like so much more. But Black Cat, she goes to a party to steal a painting with two of her henchmen and goes up against a thieves guild. The backup has a fox backup story as he tries to steal from Dracula. So then we get into the 4 out of 5s. I finished reading the Venom Omnibus, so I like do a dance like hey, woo, every time I finish an omnibus because it feels like such an accomplishment because these things are so thick. And he was my adopted character for the year, and I think I read a lot of Venom. Like it was, I got my share of Venom in this year, and it's still not over. So there'll probably be a few more Venoms to add to this omnibus for my adopted character. Let's see what I adopt next year. But it was Venom Separation Anxiety 3 and 4, which completed that series, and Venom Carnage Unleashed 1 through 4. Where Carnage is, it's interesting because there's a Carnage. Is it Unleashed? There's a new Carnage series coming out, and I think it is Unleashed, but it's just Carnage. It's not under the Venom banner, but Carnage is able to escape because he licenses his name for his own video game. Oh, this was a cool story. I really liked it. He finds he can transfer his body over the internet modems, which I never knew these symbiotes could do. And I think this is like washed under the carpet. In other words, they don't play with it anymore. 'Cause you have like airwave type capabilities where they could transfer themselves over the internet. It's crazy. He kills the creators and captures a sexy psychiatrist who has been interviewing him from another room. He actually tries to kill her, but she sends in a hologram one time. The producer wants to take advantage of all this negative publicity that's the producer of the video game to make more money on the game. Venom kills an innocent because he thinks he is a heroin addict and will abuse his new friend whom he meets on a bus, and she's a singer-songwriter. Venom also, but he has no remorse. He just killed him. That's Eddie Brock, by the way. Venom also finds he can travel on the internet, and they fight. Carnage is defeated and thrown out of the building. He could have let him fall to his death, but Venom actually saves him. We ha then have Incredible Hulk, Last Call one shot by Peter David. This and God, who did it? The art. I'm drawing a blank. But it was Dale Quinone, the creator of Pit. So I think he came right shortly after McFarlane. But one shot reunites Peter David with Dale Keown. I even had it in my notes. What am I struggling with? For a tale where Bruce calls a suicide prevention line and is trying to decide if he should have Deadpool put a bullet through his brain. And the woman on the other line actually knows him through Betty, who's dead. And it makes for a very interesting story. We then jump. So those are the ones that I really liked. Those were the 4 out of 5s, starting with Venom, Separation Anxiety, and Venom, Carnage Unleashed. We then get into the 5 out of 5s, which were Manhunter from DC Comics 6 through 10, Fantastic Four 140 from Marvel Comics, and X-Men number 36, Volume 1 from Marvel Comics. So the Manhunters series is it's just phenomenal. The trial of Carl Sands continues as Kate is almost killed when her car is set to explode. She has to take on Shrapnel, Cheshire, and many others. Dylan is the tech guy for her, saves her life from poisoning because she's cut by Cheshire. Some courtroom drama with the Justice League and parents of Firestorm, basically testifying in his defense, and the lawyers turning it around on Superman and Hawkman. Hawkman on trial was pretty interesting. Really like it because he loses his shit. Ramsey is the son of Kate, and Ramsey's grandfather shows up, but it is not he is not named, and someone is killing all the previous Manhunters, and they're heading Kate's way. So that's the mystery that's unfolding. You then jump into Fantastic Four 140. Sue has left Reed with Franklin, so her and Franklin are gone. I don't know if it was neglect or what. I'm trying to find out in the comics to find out why Sue left him. And probably something trivial, like she just couldn't take his bullshit anymore because he's always wrapped around the axle in his experiments. But Reed is devastated. Meanwhile, Annihilus is planning to attack Reed for revenge. We get Annihilus' origin story, and he defeats the FF. And at this time, Medusa is a member of the Fantastic Four in Sue's absence. Anything else I want to say that? Something power-wise is going on with Franklin. And Sue actually calls Reed for help. And then when Reed gets there, she's gone. And she turns out to be with that old woman. What's her name? She takes care of Scarlet Witch and Vision. Agatha Harkness. So she has something to do with the plot. And I read that in print. I own that. I bought that from Aaron. Another comic I think I bought from Aaron, it either was Aaron or Reed, was X-Men 36. This story was phenomenal, and I already read 37, and it wasn't as good as 36, but this one made me laugh and just enjoy it. I just enjoyed it so much. The X-Men have to get enough money to go rescue Charles Xavier in Europe from a group called Factor 3. So Factor 3 has captured Banshee and Charles Xavier, and now they have to try to figure out, well, how the hell are they going to get? And you kind of like roll your eyes. Well, they could just get in the Blackbird. Well, they don't. The Blackbird has no fuel. Well, how do you buy fuel? You need money. So there's a lot of crazy antics on what they're going to do to get money. Initially, they try to get money from Warren's parents, which makes sense because they're rich. And then they go to the welfare office, which is sort of ridiculous, to try to get money. And then Bobby and Hank try to perform for money, but they fight off a spoiled, rotten kid named Meccano with daddy issues. Meccano wants to destroy this new public library because his father's building it. The X-Men manage to stop him and are awarded plane tickets to go save Charles Xavier. Why not take the Blackbird? You know, there's no gas. And there's one point where they're the welfare office and they get rejected, and then they turn around and drive away in like a limo. And it's because that's what they have at the X-Men facility. And then there's a jobber where Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Angel try to get a job on a construction site, and it looks promising, but then they don't have their work permits and they need the money now, so it doesn't work out. Like, they give a demonstration of them like riveting, carrying up the girders, and then Marvel Girl will like put the rivets in, and then Cyclops will actually melt them in, to seal them. So yeah, it was a really enjoyable comic. So that was for June 3rd through June 9th. We then go June 10th through June 16th. This was the week of Heroes. I had to pause for a second because I'm gonna have a sneeze attack. Okay, I'm back. Hopefully it'll be gone. But this was the week of Heroes, so I read hardly anything. Had a good flight. We've been leaving later in the day over, and I read part of Sarah over there and then finished it while I was at Heroes. So this was from TKO. There were only five comics, one TKO. Actually, I should say six TKO because I'm not considering it a trade. So let's say I read 10 because TKO does come in terms of singles and trades. I have the trade, which contains Sarah 1 through 6. And the other four were from Heroes Con. I don't have the companies, but I bought them from Heroes Con. Sarah, I rated a 4 out of 5. It was a lower 4 out of 5 for me. When me and Bill reviewed the first digital comics from TKO, I remember Sarah being the last for me in terms of quality. It is a solid book. It's just not one that just jumped out at me. Like, it's a story of a female sniper in Russia that tries to protect her land from a group of Nazis, and she's with a group of men and women, but she's mostly with the female sniper group. They train the females to be snipers, and it comes down to be the Nazis also send a sniper over of their own to try to take her out, and it's a conflict between the two snipers. And there's a lot of death. They also have that interesting concept I think I me mentioned in a previous episode where I had to do research on about the Russians training dogs. They essentially strapped bombs to the. Wow, the goats are out. Our neighbors have goats, and man, they're out. I don't know if they know they're out, but they're out eating weeds. But Harley just went out to hang out with some goats. But where was I? Oh, Yeah, they strapped bombs to their, and they have a scene where that was actually taking place. And it's interesting with having all these women, in the forefront of war, and it focuses on a group of sniper women. So you get to know about six of them in the course of the 6 issues. The art is amazing by Steve Epting. Jumps off the page. The story is by Garth Ennis. Really good story. I gave it a 4 out of 5, but I'll be honest with you. I just read Goodnight Paradise. That's 5 out of 5. It was amazing. And I plan on, since this is a long weekend, of reading at least one more TKO book. I gotta get it cataloged too, 'cause I read Goodnight Paradise. Gotta put it a 5 out of 5 and write a brief description on it. What else do we got here? Five out of fives. Okay, at Heroes, I think I've told this story on Geek Brunch, but I'll tell it again here. There was one night Bill was staying in our room. We had this room that has like a bedroom, and then it has this like entertainment area with a fold-out bed. And Bill has stayed with us in the past, and he stays in that room, and we stay in our bedroom. But we hang out till late hours of the night and do stuff and talk comics. And usually, sometimes we have people over like Robert Atkins, and he comes and draws, or we have stuff happen in our room, and friends come over. In the past, Alan would come over, Sean Pryor, we'd have Daryl. They weren't all there this year, so it was pretty much just us, except for Micah and Claire. They'd come to our room a lot. And Micah is local to North Carolina, Charlotte. He lives there, him and Claire. So we saw them a lot, and they spent some time in our room. And Kirk actually saw our room, so he knows the size of the room. Because he went to drop off his comics so we could go eat. But anyway, there was one night that Bill brought over, and if you know, I've been into like these 90s advanced comics, going through books that I haven't read from like Rebel Studios and North Star Comics, like Splatter and Faustish books lately. And he found this book from Delaney, and it's called The Derelict, and I sort of spotted it on my own when I was walking aisles. I said, "That looks interesting," but I didn't pick it up. Well, Bill bought The Derelict and The Other Side comic book, and I decided to read it. I said, "Barb, I think I want to buy this for the art." And she says, "Why don't you just read Bill's and call it good?" And I said, "Oh, that makes sense, because when am I going to read it again?" Well, I had a breakdown, and I bought it for myself. I had to, because I absolutely loved it, and I felt I needed to own it in my collection. And I'll admit, it's so violent, and it's not for everyone. It's about a drug user, and it reminded me of a movie called Street Trash. And the interesting thing about Delaney is he knew what this was when I was talking to him. It was around the time that Troma was putting out films in the 80s for VHS, and Street Trash came out from another independent movie company, and it just was a world of homeless people, and awful things happen, so this world is that, like, the police are corrupt, the nobody has any kind of ethical bone in there, although Bill argued with me that one of the cops did, because but then he does like malicious stuff. So the derelict is this drug user, and you find out that he was a cop before, and he just sort of wants to just do drugs. But this cop finds out he's alive, and has to kill him because he killed him before. And he's involved in something bigger than that. And that cop is like over the top violent. Like, every cop in the precinct is scared of him. The chiefs, all the people under him, they're terrified of this guy. Well, another cop finds him and tries to sober him up against his will, like tying him to a bed and not letting him leave for a couple of days. Well, this other cop finds out. He busts into that cop's place and beats the crap out of him, almost kills him, and says, if you do anything, I'm coming back for you. And this guy's like over the top violent, and it almost has like a humoristic over the top violence to him, like something you'd see in Hitman or something by Garth Ennis. But it ends on a cliffhanger. So the first issue included 2 issues, 1 and 2. And then there was a flip book that included 3, but it was a flip book with the other side, and I'll be talking about that in another episode, probably the next one. And I just enjoyed this world. I talked about it a lot more depth on Geek Brunch, so check that out, the Heroes Con wrap up by Geek Brunch. And yeah, I read the special. The special's different. It's just a one shot. It has this like gloss gold embossed cover, which is very 90s, and it was just sort of the derelict sniffing paint and getting real high and finding out these two guys that want to kill him, and ends up turning the game on them and killing those two guys. So yeah, that was an interesting Heroes Con read. There were only 10 books read that week. And then we'll get into the final week, which I haven't totaled, but I'm going to try to do it on the fly here. 20, total of 20 for the next week, which was June 17th through June 23rd. And I will start at the bottom with the 3 out of 5s. Insect Bath, also written by Delaney. I sort of cleaned house with Delaney. So you're gonna see a lot of stuff from Heroes. Let me show you the breakdown. I didn't find out what the individual publishing things were for these artist alley creators. I just grouped them all into Heroes. So we had 4 from Marvel, 10 from Heroes Con. We had 2 from Eclipse, 1 DC, 1 from Death Ray, Antarctic Press, and 1 American Mythology. So we're gonna start at the 3 out of 5s. Insect Bath. This is another Delaney book, an anthology of shock horror in the vein of The Splatter. And his name is Alex Delaney. Had a great story about it. This is the only one I wrote down because the other stories were very bizarre. Some of them were disturbing as hell, but that's what you get in Splatter. But I'll talk to you about the Delaney one because I liked it. It was about a guy that just constantly jacks off near his sink. Well, his semen falls down a drain and creates an insect that kills him. I just thought it was hilarious, and creepy at the same time. Then picked up a book called Derelict the Mighty. This one was a survivor of a plane crash becomes a barbarian hero in a fantasy land where he saves the city and a princess. Or does he really condemn them by killing off an evil instead of capturing the evil? We don't know. And then I'm sure it'll be continued on. I don't know if I'd get it. I'm sort of on the fence if it was there. It's sort of reminds me of something like if you like Jumanji in a fantasy world. You might like this world. You might like this comic. The next one is Web of Spider-Man 95 and 96, and Spirits of Vengeance 5 and 6. This was a crossover with Venom. We got Blaze, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man try to stop Death Watch and the Death Spawn. During the battle, Venom is trying to kill Spider-Man. Spider-Man teams up to defeat Demon Goblin, Hobgoblin, Venom, and the clone from Infinity War with all the arms. It was interesting, and I read that digitally, and luckily they had all 4 parts, so I was able to delve into Web as Spider-Man and continue the story. The next one is from Antarctic Press. It's horror comics. It's a creepy ass ice cream man type story. There's really not much there. I haven't read Ice Cream Man from Image Comics, but I imagine to be much better than this one. I will continue on with their horror line though, if it's quarterly or whatever they come out with. We then got Spirit Drifters. This is a world where magic is outlawed and two magicians save a town from a huge guardian robot. One of the magicians actually set it all up. Behind the scenes, that the woman magician sort of corrupted the robot that protects the city. The second story is about another magician who's being hunted down and kills her prey with magic daggers. And I gotta walk over to let Harley in, who's been in the sun for a long time, and she wants to come in now. And we'll get back to it. So you can see that this particular week I'm reading a lot of Heroes books, Heroes Con books, which is very unusual for me. Usually I come back in the con with comics and I don't read them for years. But I was trying to read a lot of them that, because the creators were fresh in my mind. What I was talking to them about was fresh in my mind. And I was trying to read at least the ones I really wanted to read. I like Spirit Drifters. That was a one shot. We got Swan Song. This is another Alex Delaney, a post-apocalyptic world of cannibals as people try to eat each other. We then have the 4 out of 5s. We have New York Zero, Year Zero, number one. Actually, it's number two. I don't have number one. So I was in the middle of a story. It's from Eclipse Comics. It just looked cool in the dollar bin at the comic shop. It's a futuristic world where one guy is being hunted down by a group of women who want his bulletproof jacket. He spends the night in a cybernetic coffin. He's running from them, and they see him get into this like cybernetic coffin. It's basically a coffin that you sleep in. They have all these units, and the next day, I don't know why they don't just wait him out if they really wanted the jacket, but the next day, a cop knocks on it when the unit opens up. It's basically sealed for 24 hours. And it's interesting because in the coffin next to him, there are like these beds, and the guy gets devoured by rats. So it may, for a split second there, it makes you think like the main character that we have is being eaten, but it's really the guy right next to him. And then the next day, he picks up a gun and saves a woman being ambushed by soldiers. Now he's off in a helicopter with her. Through a cleverly staged deception, a soldier manages to get on the last flight from Venus after fighting a. So this is the premise of the story. So there's a soldier that's fighting a war on Venus, and he leaves the war to return home. He finds a war of a very different kind in the year 2015. That also makes this comic very interesting because it came out in the early 2000s, I'd imagine, or maybe in the 90s. And 2015 was very far into the future, and you get to see what they thought 2015 would look like. New York City has become a capital of 5 United States. And has over 30 million inhabitants in an overcrowded street. Those without money kill and steal in order to survive. Those with money buy guns in order to relieve their aggression by randomly shooting people on the street. That's a description of what this world is like. And then I might have found my first manga that I liked. It's also from Eclipse Comics. I guess Viz used to publish underneath Eclipse, and it's called The Legend of Kamui. And there's royalty that is hunting animals, in the forest. And this guy's an expert marksman, and everybody adores him, and he's royalty. But everybody says, "Man, you were the best shot. I can't believe you could shoot this arrow on a horse and always hit your target." And he goes, "It's not all me." He says, like, "I'm one with the horse, and without this particular horse, I would be like any other normal human being." So he praises this horse, and then all of a sudden, one of his servant guys goes to go water the horse and bathe the horse, when some guy sort of just jumps out of the side there, and for no apparent reason, cuts off this horse has a white leg and a brown leg, and he cuts off the white leg and takes it. And there's this boy Kamui that witnesses it, and he's like, "What in the world is going on?" And this criminal then is being hunted by that royal, that prince and his guards, when Kamui actually saves him, and he gets shot in the process, and but he does manage to escape. But later he's in a boat and is hit with the storm. And that same exact stranger that cut off that horse's leg finds him floating in the water and brings him ashore and tries to revive him. And then there's this weird scene where they can't revive him. And he says, "Man, I need to find heat. We need to heat this guy's body up. It's getting cold." And one of the women just takes off her robe and just gets on top of him. And ironically, this woman was saved by Kamui way back when. And just, it doesn't say how or why, but she just got on top of him and they end up reviving him. And the story continues. And I just was intrigued. And I did put the next 9 issues on my cart for consideration at mycomicshop.com because I enjoyed it. So that was from Eclipse Comics, 2 Eclipse back to back. We then have a comic called Saltwater. Amazing art. It may have the liquor's artist, but we'll see how that pans out. But this book is about a young woman who has to live in the lower level of society, which it's weird. There's like this water layer, and these people have to like hold their breaths and go underwater and then go to this lower layer where it's like a caste system. All the rich people live above the water, and the lower caste system lives below the water, and she's part of the lower caste system. And the lower caste system has to mine a precious element for the rich people to basically sell to fuel people's ships. And she helped, her part of her job is to help mine that particular material. And she decides to change her life by destroying the ship that is taking the minerals off planet. Really cool art by Donna O'Bara. And really enjoyed the story. I don't think there'll be a sequel. I think this is a one shot. But it did establish the world. It is something, though, that you could build a lot of comics off of this story arc. That's Saltwater. Then Static Number One, really enjoyed this. This is about a drugged out mercenary is hired to hunt rare animals and parts for a crazy inventor that is trying to build some hybrid creature, like a Frankenstein creature. When done, the mercenary sort of repeats his drug addiction, and then he wakes up the next day and repeats, rinse and repeat. It's a hyper detailed art in the vein of Tim V. Hill, a lot of line work. I can't think of the Avatar artist, but it reminded me of his artwork. Really cool book. We then get Z Girl and the Four Tigers. This is something that was introduced to me by Kirk Spencer at the con, and I really enjoyed it. It was Kirk Manley did it at Heroes Con, and Z Girl is on a mission to Nigeria where it's infested with zombies, and they have to contain the situation. She comes across a child who needs to help, but turns into a bunch of child zombies. And then there's a god that is manifesting those children, and they're really not alive, and they're really not zombies, but they're husks that this god is using to keep them alive. And she defeats the god and returns a magic stone. The second story, she has to defeat a ghost that is haunting a house. She uses a box to get him to complete his, the ghost to have form, and then kills him while he has form. The third story is a World War I story about a vampire. Issue one introduces a character, and she defeats the monkey priest and Shiva, but she's injured in the process. While in a healing bath, she starts to remember her origins, so we're learning about the origins. And you learn about the four tigers in issue zero. They're not really prominent in zero and one, other than you know they're there. It's almost all Z Girl, but issue zero does give like a who's who or what is it called? Marvel Universe. I can't remember what they call it. Mohamu books. Gives a write-up of all the different tigers, and essentially a tiger is sort of, they have like special abilities and such, but they're like reincarnated beings that manifest a body, and then when that body expires, they're replaced by another being. We then have Griffin number one. This was a really good one from SBI. It's a direct-to-digital book, and this is a Captain Lila Griffin stands trials for offenses against the galaxy-spanning sovereign Reach, as the Reach searches for answers to what happened to Griffin at the edge of space. The Resistance has also targeted them for possible defection, but Griffin has plans of her own to form her own team. Lila Giffen has escaped the Reach custody and is recruited or taken hostage by a Reach soldier as their second in command. Now they break out of the smart they break out the smartest man in the universe to take a fight to the Reach. This is by Ben Kahn. Really good discussion with him. Really enjoyed this one. The next one I heard about on 11 O'Clock Comics. It's like Charlie Brown in a post-apocalyptic world. It's called Weapon Brown. All I read was chapter one. In the first chapter, we see Charlie Brown, who is very bitter as a child for being picked on continuously. A nuclear war happens, and Charles is turned into a weapon. And he's turned into a weapon by a secret organization, and Lucy's one of the scientists. So now that he's back, he is seeking out Lucy, who manipulated him, and turns to Peppermint Patty for answers. She's a prostitute and runs a whorehouse. Charlie Brown goes after Lucy, looking for Linus. He kills Lucy and fights with Linus and his own sister, who unleashed the Great Pumpkin on him. Charlie Brown kills them all in chapter one. So we'll see what happens from that. We then get The Other Side of Town, which was the flip book with the derelict. This is a 5 out of 5, so the next three books are 5 out of 5s, or four books are 5 out of 5s. The Other Side of Town also takes place in the same city and world as the derelict. A cop is undercover to try to find out who the serial killer is, who's killing all these prostitutes. He essentially makes art out of prostitutes by killing them. Very blood-related art. He violently kills them, and it's art to him. The cop is so deep undercover that she has sex and does drugs, and has many killed. And it's with this corrupt. It's the same corrupt police force that's in the derelict. With her two violent pimps, will they get there in time? These violent pimps are crazy, man. They are insane. And they do break down the door, but we don't know if they get there in time. Hopefully we'll see what happens if we ever see a number three. I'm hoping we do in at least a year or two, because I'll still remember the story because I really enjoyed it. Naomi number five. Naomi's real mother tells her backstory of how she was born, and her parents were protectors of the world, but they were hunted and killed by protecting Naomi by a being called Zumbato. And it also explains how her aunt helped her send her to Earth. She tells her origin to her friend at the end of the and at the end Zumbato shows up. On her world, a handful of individuals were granted powers when the ozone went, and her parents were two of them. Zumbato was on death row, and he also received the powers and is out to kill her and all of her friends. The next 5 out of 5 is from American Mythology, and again, I'm back on my Zorro kick. Zorro enters a rich church community where corruption has taken over, and they are all enslaved, whether they work in the place with the priests in this little sanctuary or whether they're sent to the mines to go work in the mines. And now Zorro has to figure out how to free these people. And he's undercover as Diego, you know, one of the Don Diego, who plays stupid to these priests and military, so he can try to figure out and free these people. Matter of fact, there's one scene in there where he's rich and the priests and the soldiers want to show him a good time, so they say, "We're giving you a room," and he's being real spoiled. He says, "Can I get a room on the first floor?" Well, they send in a sexy woman, and he thinks it's just, you know, to bring him water, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll have a drink." And she drops her top, and then Zorro's like, "Well, I'll take that as a compliment, but I know you're not dropping your top because you think highly of me. You're dropping your top because they told you to drop your top." And he's like, "Put your clothes back on, and we're gonna figure out what to do." And her brother's in the mines, so we'll see what happens. Really loved Zorro, Sacrilege number one. Number two is out, so I need to dig that out and read it. And I want to thank you for listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads. I do want to make an announcement. There's going to be another episode of Mike M's Collector's Corner. I have another collector I'm going to be interviewing soon. So that should be coming up within the month of July. So look forward to that. I am, because this particular collector has been an inspiration to Mike M's Collector's Corner, and he's been podcasting for quite some time. And he's a huge collector, and he has a lot of the same philosophies as that I do when it comes to wanting to read every single comic there is and just appreciating comics for what they are. So you have that to look forward to. But you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. On the Twitter is the best place to get to me at Mike Myers Brunch, MikeMyers Brunch. Brunch. And I on the Facebook page, you can find this podcast and many others under Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow all the episode threads there. I think that's about it. And the website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I want to thank you for listening. And if you ever have feedback, questions, comments, feel free to send them. I do have a few questions for next week, and I want to thank you for listening and listening to me just ramble off like it's my daily diary. And you know what? Everything I do is ad hoc. I don't have time to be refined, but I do feel that this is me. What you get is me. So I am not refined. I'm not like other podcasts who plan things. I don't work that way. I've never have. I don't like to be on podcasts that have a schedule. I like to be more loose. That's why I always go off on tangents. That's my method of podcasting. And you can also find me sending in clips to the comic book page preview spotlight every month and see what I picked. And I don't pick the whole catalog. I try to limit myself to one or three items max because I talk a lot. I ramble, and I don't know what I'm going to say when I start the recording, but I do talk a lot. So, as you probably know. Yeah, there's a lot of things to look forward to, and I look forward to doing another episode probably this weekend. So I will talk to you again soon, and thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.